Songwriter Margot Price has the kind of year that musicians dream about. She rose from relative obscurity in the Nashville music scene on the strength of hard luck songs about alcohol and loss, and made appearances on Saturday Night Live and a Prairie Home Companion along the way. Music contributor Merritt Davis spoke with her while she was in town recently, and the two charted her rise through the Atlanta music venues where she's appeared.
You haven't been in Atlanta that much. Last time you were at Eddie's Attic.
Yes, I was at Eddie's Attic. Small venue, but great energy. The crowd was amazing. Met so many good people. And then the time prior to that was 6 to 7 years ago, I would say. We played a basement in a pizza place, but there was about five people. So
a basement pizza place to headlining Terminal West, but this has been quite a year for you, Margot. I mean, pretty unbelievable. Saturday Night Live, Prairie Home Companion, a big tour. Did you imagine that this could happen?
I definitely had faith in the songs and the album, but I don't know that I projected that it would go this far. I didn't think it would be as widely accepted.
So many of your songs are autobiographical. Hands of Time is a song that really tells your story.
Started living off the land, but my firstborn died, and I cried out to God, is there anybody out there looking down on me at all?
What do your family members think of the story? What was their reaction? Because obviously they're so intertwined into it. What was that reveal like to them?
You know, I think it kind of slowly came the reality that a lot of the songs were true. And I had, you know, hidden some of the things that had went on in the previous years, you know, following losing my son and, spending time in jail, and so I think when they found out, you know, it was like a slow realization, and maybe by that point, you know, I was doing better mentally, so I think it was good for them to find out about it then and not when I was in the throes of depression and
Is that weird when you're at a show, and because that's such a signature song for you and this album, is that weird when people are singing back your life to them?
It was strange the first few times when people would sing along with me, and I didn't quite know how it made me feel, but now it makes me feel really happy, you know. And I know that when people are singing it, hopefully they're, you know, connecting to their own failures, you know, jobs that didn't work out for them and people that they've lost. So it's kind of feels nice to commiserate together and to, you know, it's like singing at a funeral.
You've had some incredible things happen to you this year. Let's talk about Saturday Night Live for a minute, because that breaks so many careers. That really changes the landscape in the sense where people learn who you are. Did it do that for you? What was it like getting that call? Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, I was actually like in my robe, and I was getting ready to go sing at the Ryman. I was singing with Andrew Bird that night, and so I was trying to get ready for that. I was running late. I was flustered as it was, and then my manager called me, and he had a newborn baby, and so he called me, and the baby was like screaming in the background. He was like, "Sorry about the baby crying. As soon as the car starts going faster, everything will, you know, he'll chill out. But I just wanted to know if you want to play SNL in like 8 days. And I think it was like April 1st. It was around April Fool's Day. And I thought, you've got to be kidding. But I had known that they were kicking around the idea, and I'd known that they'd come to scout some of our shows. And but I thought, okay, great, we'll be on their radar, and maybe a few years from now we'll be able to do that. But it happened so quickly, and then I just, you know, rushed and pulled everything together, and you end up being there for about a week. And so from Tuesday on, you really get comfortable in the space, and everybody was so nice. Lorne Michaels had a dozen pink roses there on the table for me, and I think, though, it didn't really kick in that I had done it for a couple weeks. It was like I was just in this euphoric state.
That was obviously a phenomenal performance, but it really kind of puts you on the map. In my mind, you were already way on the map, but that's, you know, such a mass appeal kind of thing. Recently, you were on with Jack White on Prairie Home Companion, and that was also a big opportunity because it was the first show. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I have wanted to, you know, perform with Jack for a long time, and he just now is putting out this, you know, he put out the acoustic record of his songs, and so he's kind of getting back into playing, and I've loved that song for a really long time. I'm lonely, but I ain't that lonely yet.
And I'm lonely, but I ain't that lonely yet.
Of course, I've listened to Prairie Home Companion for decades and really love that show. And so it was amazing. It was so much fun. He's great to perform with and just really easygoing. And yeah, it was a good time.
One thing that I've heard you say recently that I was kind of blown away by this and impressed, that when you were early on trying to book shows for yourself, you pretended you were a man.
Yeah, I did. I started out writing as myself, and then I thought, well, that's not very professional. Anybody who's, you know, probably got a good thing going has somebody working for them. So I decided to create a booking agency, and I thought I might as well just put a man's name at the end of the email because, you know, it looks a lot better to come from a guy named John than Margot. So, I kind of built this alter ego, built, just like a sort of a backstory for him, and I ended up booking an entire U.S. tour, coast to coast, played at the House of Blues and on Sunset Strip in Los Angeles, and did, you know, decently well for what little I'd had and what little we'd done, because, you know, people want to know what kind of draw you have in the city, and I just, you know, fake it till you make it.
And I love that about you, and it's such a great story about, I mean, it's, I don't want to say it's great that you were rejected so many times, but, I mean, rejection really fuels the drive, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, there's so many people out there that want to be musicians nowadays, and there's, you know, anybody can record their own music online and make a page and really, you know, appear to be a professional musician, but it's a tough business, and, you know, I think you got to really want it. Got to be half crazy to, you know, keep getting kicked down and just getting back up.
Well, you've had some support from someone who's from Atlanta and a great music advocate, CMT's Leslie Fram. So talk about what happened with her, because, you know, she really got her radio career started in Atlanta and is, to me, seems like what she's doing now is really trying to change the conversation.
Yeah, she is. She's a rock star. She's out there, you know, fighting the good fight, and their support with me has really surprised me because of what I have seen on CMT for the past few years. So I'm feel really happy that she appreciates what I do and that she put Hurtin' on the Bottle on CMT and now they've pushed Hands of Time, which I think is a very different song than many times what's on there. So it's great that she's trying to make the landscape broader and deeper. She's a very smart woman.
A lot's in store for you. this is a very big year, and next year I would assume you're going to be recording, so you've been writing this whole time. So what's next for Margot Price?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people have this kind of, you know, the question that gets asked a lot is, well, now that everything is going good for you, what are you going to write about? Because I have wrote about my struggles in the music business, but I think that there's so many things to write about in the world, you know, as far as women go, the pay gap is something that I'm very passionate about, and I think it's really sad that probably in my lifetime I will never see that close. It's projected to close, I think, in 150 years. So that's something I've you know, been writing a little bit about. There's a lot to touch on as far as what it's like to be on the road and to be away from home and to be a woman in the business and the hardships that I think we still have to fight for.
But isn't that, if someone says, oh, you know, things are going well, you've got nothing to write about, but isn't that a narrow-minded view? Because couldn't you write from the perspective of other people, too?
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly it. There's so many people out there suffering. I mean, we've had issues with police brutality, the race. I mean, I worry about the state of the world. And when I first started writing, I only wrote political music, and I didn't really write anything autobiographical. And then I feel like, I really went through some things that I had to work out. And the album just kind of came out of a therapy for myself. And you just kind of have to face it or go crazy. And so now that I've worked through a lot of my deep-seated emotional issues, I'll maybe start working on the world again.
That was songwriter Margot Price speaking to contributor Mara Davis. Price's latest album is Midwest Farmer's Daughter.